Hello and welcome to another long-awaited Connecting Consciousness. We've had a bit of a vacation, a bit of a break, so we're a little bit out of kilter. Today's the 2nd and hopefully it'll go live tomorrow, Saturday, or maybe on the Sunday. So very pleased to actually be back in front of everybody with a lot of news. I'm sure that you're all watching the different streams and you're all picking up many of the things that are taking place, and we don't really seem to get any break. As soon as we sort of digest one piece of information, something else comes along, and it's just like a roller coaster ride. So let's just start then, and let's just deal with some of the issues I want to talk about. On the website, I put a post out saying that I had been told there was an attempted arrest of one of the Clintons. I totally stand by that. I did not say that the Clintons had been arrested, but there was an attempt. I received two pieces of information from two separate sources, but the person that I actually spoke to, one was through a message, but the other person was not able or not willing to give me anything more. I don't know whether that was an attempt as a federal agent turning up on a door or on a motor car, or whether it was literally in an office and somebody saying, I want to process this, I want to do this, and trying to push for it, and somebody saying, no, not at this time. But what it does tell us is that there are real moves afoot to try to bring the Clintons to some form of hearing. And that I'm no doubt about. If that's really going to happen, then it's largely to do with information coming from Epstein, but also I would say with Assange, which may or may not have taken place yet, but certainly with Jeffrey Epstein, information that he may be prepared to give, I think will be crucial to any effective charges being brought against the Clintons. People have said, well, we all know that the Clintons flew on an aeroplane, or we all know the Clintons did this or the Clintons did that. But unfortunately, that is to not understand that many of the people who might have gone to court to testify that are now dead. Many of them have been bribed or blackmailed. And it's one thing to know the truth on alternative media. It's quite another thing to say, well, we're going to go through the court system and publicly prosecute, because if you do that, you need evidence. Now, the problem is that many crimes that are 10, 20, 30 plus years old, there isn't anybody around who's brave enough or prepared to do anything. Some of the crimes that will perhaps work out as charges are much more recent, and they're much lesser, but that's about the only thing they've got until some of these very big names begin to crack and begin to come forward. So I've no doubt that there was a serious attempt to take this matter forward with the Clintons. I think that there was a tweet from one of the Clintons a day ago, excuse me, or 2 days ago, but one of the other Clintons hasn't tweeted since the 22nd of this month. Now, that may not mean anything at all, but it's an indicator maybe that people are trying to keep their head down. So that's really important, obviously. Watch Facebook, watch Twitter, look at these feeds. These would be the first to get something leaked to them, and obviously I'll get something, then I'll put that out. So that's that one. The Epstein is really important because what's not widely understood is that he's a true multi-millionaire. He absolutely is, there's no question of that, but doesn't appear to have any businesses, doesn't appear to have any way that he raises the money. And it's a legitimate question to ask, how can somebody who is a multi-millionaire yet doesn't own anything, how can they receive all this money? And why would somebody receive huge amounts of money, staggering amounts of money, if they're not in business? And Epstein was a fixer. He fixed things for the rich and famous. And that was one of the reasons that he, or the main principal reason that he received a lot of money. He was able to organize things so that other people could go, and he would do all the dirty work, if you like, in terms of arranging it all. I haven't any more information on the Marines trying to get onto the island. I know they've taken digging equipment with them. We know that Epstein poured something like $29 million worth of concrete down into this underground base, and that will be one heck of a task for anyone to dig their way through. But ultimately, that's the plan. And the Marines are being used because they're about the only force on Earth who are 100% not corrupted. Very interesting, isn't it? So let's see what goes with that. talk about the what used to be called the reset, and I changed that to rebalancing. I thought the reset was a term that was used 3 or 4 years ago for financial change. And they were going to reset or default the economy, and I always had my doubts, because if you reset an economy, you crash it. You crash it in order to rebuild it. Now, the bad guys don't want to crash it, obviously, and the good guys don't want to crash it, because they're trying to build up on what they've got. So a rebalancing act is better. And what I'm hearing is that in large measure, that is on its way behind doors. You know, there's nothing in the public, there's no posters going up or no changes, but behind doors there's the most incredible amount of meetings that have to take place. It's not just one big meeting and then you get it or you don't. There are every country, every group, countless meetings have been taking place. And what's interesting is that we've seen in America the Federal Reserve cut interest rates. Now, people in Great Britain, you know, where interest rates have been cut considerably and have been up and down like a yo-yo, that doesn't seem a big deal, but it is, because this is the first time the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates for 10 years. Now, that's a very important indicator, something that President Trump has been pushing for some time. What's also interesting, of course, is that there's the stock market in the US and Europe took a hammering, because President Trump said that he would impose further tariffs on the $300 billion worth of Chinese goods on top of the $250 billion worth that were already slated. There is a meeting between America and China in September. I think it's September the 1st. And if that is resolved, then that $300 billion won't happen. People have misunderstood and underestimated President Trump. I think many people thought that he wouldn't go ahead with the second tranche of tariffs. They thought that America would back down, and that's to misunderstand the man. You know, he's absolutely determined on this, and it will be China that has to back down. China will have to come to a deal, because it's not true that America needs China more. China actually needs America more. China is contracting at the moment. It's actually had its huge explosion and it's now contracting. So it is the Chinese who will have to do some deal. Chinese are very good at saving face. They'll do something that makes it look as if they haven't backed down, but they will have to. So that's very important, but it's part of this overall financial situation that's taking place. When you look at the situation where interest rates are fast approaching like 1%, you've got money that's created, and we all know that it's not real money at all. It's a holograph. It's a you know, smoke screen. It's not real at all. And you cannot go on ad infinitum like this. You need to be able to say, we need to take stock of what we've got financially throughout the world, and we need to plan how we spend that. Or we need to plan what our forward thinking will be. You know, to actually organize and plan it. So there is a very strong movement afoot to have some sort of agency, some sort of group that would look ahead and be able to plan ahead and begin to look at projects that don't just suit just a handful of people, but projects that actually help huge communities. Now that really is taking place. Unfortunately, there's nothing in the public domain yet because they're all behind the scenes and having the meetings. But that is a very important point. The other thing is that there are more calls now close to President Trump wanting a real investigation into 9/11. So there, 9/11 is something that President Trump doesn't want to tackle until the very end, because of the way it's interlinked with so many other individuals, so many other corporations, so many other structures. So whilst for many people 9/11 was perhaps the most serious of the travesties against humanity, it is perhaps because of that it will be one of the last, hopefully, to be tackled. Looking along those lines, the Senate have agreed to televise any court cases that occur in Guantanamo Bay. The Americans refer to it as Gitmo. And so that is very important because it means that they are expecting to have cases, quasi-military stroke civilian cases, which they want televised. Now that's the biggest indicator yet that the indictments will be opened, or some of them will be opened in large numbers, and we would expect to see something televised. So that's a very, very positive thing. It's been a really heck of a time, and you know, people say, you know, I don't always talk about 5G. Well, just because I don't talk about it every radio show doesn't mean that it's not important to me. David Icke has just produced something on YouTube about, I think, about the bees and the pollinators being severely affected by 4G and 5G. I haven't seen it. I've been told about it. That would be worth looking at. Remember that Monsanto changed its name, but we all know Monsanto. And Monsanto produces seeds that do not require insect pollination. So, you see, if all the insects in the world died out, there would only be one corporation that could sell you seeds because they don't need pollinating. And if anybody does not understand the link between the death of insect pollinators and a product that doesn't require insects, well, then I'm afraid, you know, you're the ones living on the moon. So that's something about 5G that, please watch that. Please be aware of that. Got a lot of respect for that man. Okay, and finally, in opening the books. So we've had a few people who were on a waiting list, so they've been given the first call. But the books are open. There's a limited number of spaces, I think. But if you are interested to have a reading with me, please go online to the website, simonparks.org, and find the date that's available to you and book it. So thank you very much. It's great to be back. vacations, as the Americans say, or holidays, as we say, they are lovely, but they don't half get in the way of stuff that we want to do. But we all need a break from time to time. So thank you. And thank you to Becky, who's been very patiently waiting with the questions. People have asked, do you go through the questions beforehand? Only one or two, where a question might be a little bit suspicious or a bit dodgy, then I'm thinking, well, what's that about? But generally speaking, no, I don't have pre-sight of the questions. They just come at me and I just go with it. So thank you, Becky. Are we ready to go?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so the first question is by Teresa, who says, I have a friend who is interested in an appointment with Simon, but he doesn't speak English. Can someone be with him to translate the date of that appointment?
The answer is no, in the sense that we can't do that. But if you are a dual speaker, or you're able, or you know somebody who can, if you give us, when you book online, if you book and you give your details, then you would get that in English, and then you could then, you know, change that across to whichever language this person is, and during the actual consultation would need somebody there who could translate my English into their language. I've done it many times before. It works. You know, we don't rush it, we take it easy. There are some concepts which are very difficult and we have to repeat or rephrase, but by and large it does work. But I'm afraid that your side would have to find a person who would be prepared to do the translation. I can't do that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Carl says, Simon, we are so blessed to have you and the help you're providing humanity. Thank you. I've just watched a program called Draining the Oceans, and this one was about the area around the Bermuda Triangle. I was wondering what was Simon's opinion on the Bermuda Triangle?
During the 1970s, it was quite a talking point, and unfortunately, things drop away. Some years ago, I did a TV show, and I was in a taxi cab going to the radio show in the morning and just chatting to the taxi driver, and he obviously knew because he had a contract with the radio show, so he knew about me and what it was about. And he said, when I was 19 or 20, he said, I was strongly interested in UFOs, but I'm not now. So I asked him, well, what's changed? Why haven't you stayed interested in it? And he said, "Oh well, because it's never reported on the news. It's not talked about. So you know, it just dropped away." I think that's the point. When we live in a 3D world with a 4D control system, we tend to take on board what is pumped to us every day. And if a topic is not touched or it's not validated, then you know there's no information from the official line, and we drop away. There are many people, of course, who haven't dropped away, and they've gone to find the information elsewhere. But I'm talking generally, and so it was with the Bermuda Triangle. That in the 70s, there was a great deal of discussion about it, but because the officials didn't offer even comments on it. You know, there were documentaries done on it by companies or organizations, but officially there was no response. And so what happens is, because the tap of officialdom is turned off, people's interest declines and is pushed elsewhere. The important thing about the Bermuda Triangle area is simply because of this quantum effects. In other words, there were an aircraft that was lost in particular. I mean, lots of boats and ships have been lost, but an American, I think it was a Navy craft, I can't be sure, an airplane belonging to the Navy or the Coast Guard was lost. And then a patrol of five other aircraft was sent out, and they were lost as well. But what makes this particularly important is that after the fuel of the aircraft should have run out, so that they would have ditched, radio messages were received from them. Now that is really important, because that tells us that some great phenomena is taking place. Lots of links between Atlantis and the Bermuda Triangle. What we can say is there's an intermittently active portal that's shut off at the moment, but was active during that period. I don't know who was in charge of it, but what I can tell you is that the vast majority of those losses were due to this portal. I do not believe that the portal was being activated to try to kill or destroy anything, and that wasn't the intention. So it's genuine. Those losses are staggering in that small area. There are books available on the subject, but unfortunately there's nothing very modern. Thank you.
Another thing that I remember reading was that the readings on the there was some sort of magnetic effect or electromagnetic effect that was affecting the readings in the aircraft
it was the compass that was affected. The pilots were reporting that the sun was in one position but the compass was showing something else. You see, we're talking now quite a long time ago, before electronic navigation, and pilots were very reliant on their magnetic compass, and that would spin. The boats as well, the reports were that the compass with the needle or the dial would spin round, and so they had no idea of reading. Also, people reported the stars looked strange, or the environment looked strange, which is again a portal effect. Electromagnetism is something that we do expect in these phenomena.
Okay, thank you. Larissa says, Hi Simon and Becky, Thank you for all your hard work, and may God bless both of you.
Thank
Simon,
you.
Could you please explain what do you see when looking at a photo of a person? Sometimes you say, I need to look at the photo of a person to see his or her soul. So what do you see? Thank you again.
Okay, thanks. It sounds like you've had a reading with me, or a member of the family, or a close friend has. I'll generally ask for a photograph when a person is not there on the Skype. But I will ask for a photograph of that person who's there with me on a Skype if I want to connect with that person in a timeline prior to the moment I'm talking to them. That's a bit wordy. What I mean is, when I'm talking to somebody on Monday, I am making judgments, I am receiving information on Monday. But I might want to be able to contrast that with how that person was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or what have you. Now, if I'm looking for, if a person tells me they've had some traumatic incidents in their life, by looking at a set of pictures, I can see when that occurred. If you look at a tree that's been chopped down, it has rings in it. And, you know, we know that in periods of wet weather, a lot of tree grows quickly, so the rings of the tree are widely spaced, and in a drought, hot weather, the tree doesn't grow very much and the rings are quite close. Well, when I look at a person, I don't see the rings as a tree, but in the energy field, which is not exactly the same as the auric field, but in the energy field, I will be able to see certain things, and I'll probably be right within 1 year or 2 years. So I might say to somebody, you know, what happened to you when you were 15, or what happened to you when you were 5? Because these are markers that we all maintain within our energy field. They affected us, they happened to us. They're part of our life. And just as a brain has a memory, well, the soul has a memory, but let's keep it organic. The brain has a memory and will remember something. So on the 23rd of June, 1990, I did this, you'll remember that. Well, the energy field also remembers slightly differently, but it encodes, not as effectively, but it'll encode the highs and the lows. So when I look at a photograph, I'm looking to compare that individual with the person I'm speaking now. Have they had a walk-in? Has the soul changed in that body? When I look at a photograph, I can only make a reading at the moment the photograph was taken. So if a photograph was taken on Tuesday, and 20 years ago, that is what I'm looking at. I can't go forward or backwards from that, but I would want to compare that photograph, that snapshot in time, with the person I'm speaking to. And often people will want to talk to me about their kids, and their kids are not there, so they'll show me pictures of the kids. And again, I can make information at the moment the photograph was taken. So that is why I do that. That's how it works. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Susan says, Hi Simon, when someone is cloned, say at the age of 40, is the clone born as a baby and then aged to the same age as the original person? And does the clone get to have a soul / mind of its own? Or how does this thing with clones work? Thanks for sharing your views on all sorts of matters.
Well, thank you. It's an interesting question, isn't it? Don't often get clone questions. There's been a number of things. Sylvester Stallone, was it Judge Dredd? I can't remember. There were some films that had cloned people in it, and there's been several films. It was Blade Runner, I think, had clones. But anyway, generally speaking, a clone will contain a soul. It doesn't have to, it's not exclusive, but any clone that's not containing a soul would act in such a very unhuman way and very strange way that it would soon be found out. It would be very erratic and very strange. It wouldn't survive very happily here on Earth. So clones can contain souls. And the points of clones are, you know, many reasons why you would clone somebody, from a financial point of view, to a deception point of view, to survival point of view. You know, the crazy scientists' minds of the 1950s and 60s, they would offer, you know, cryogenically freezing people, you know, and bringing them back 100 years later. It's quite fun that 2001 A Space Odyssey had sort of similar things to that. Well, imagine if you had a clone and you just whip the soul out of a person and pop it into a clone. The point about clones is that they're capable of space travel far more robustly than a normal biological body. And generally speaking, a clone is not grown as a baby and then artificially aged. Generally, it's grown to keep pace with the life form that you are wishing to mimic or you're wishing to copy. So let us take an individual, and that individual is cloned, and then suddenly that individual gets into a car crash and has some form of scar or damage. What they would have to do on the clone, even though the clone wasn't out there in the public, they would have to replicate that on the clone. And then people age and they change, they get smaller or fatter or what have you, so the clones every so often have to be remodeled to that person. It has to be that way, because if you don't and you wish to clone a person and the original biological form dies, you might be weeks getting the clone ready. And that just defeats the whole object. So you have to have a stack of clones ready to roll. And it's a very expensive business. They don't do it for many people. But it's much more common than you would expect. And it is underground bases where they do this. And there are perhaps 7 bases on the Earth now where clones are maintained. Mainly by the military, the off-planet type intervention, those bases are somewhat out of commission now. But clones are a last resort, a fallback for individuals who are taken out, and they need them, to be back active, as opposed to a clone who might be more advanced for space travel. That's a completely different kettle of fish. So I hope that answers the question. That's an interesting one. Thank you for writing in.
Thank you very much.
All right, Becky, maybe we can have the next question, please.
Yeah, this question is from Ariane, who says, "Dear Simon, I remember having heard long ago myths and stories concerning Lilith, like a dark moon, and would please like to know what is your knowledge about this in terms of our actual history. What do those stories refer to? What is its influence? Thank you so very much."
Right. It's interesting when you refer to the word our history, because that's correct. It's humanity's history. It's a history that we've been lied to with. It's not the truth. And in many ways, the Bible, and I do have a copy of the Bible here, so don't throw yours out. There is quite a lot of truth mixed in with it. The moon that we have today is an artificial satellite, and it's no coincidence that humanity, which was artificially created, and I have to be very careful here, I don't want to give the wrong impression. Humanity has always been humanity, but the creational event that occurred was artificial. So the humanity that we are today, Homo sapiens sapiens, that is an artificial sped up process from what was original human stock. So humanity was here before the artificial alteration, but what we are today is not what we would have been had we been left alone. So the moon is an artificial satellite. Lilith was the first of the female forms artificially created, and there's always been a connection between a divine feminine or goddess feminine and the moon, but unfortunately that has been taken over by these sort of satanic forces that try to link sacrifice culture with moon phases and with the moon itself. So the connection between that particular female individual and the moon, seen as inseparable, being part of it, part of magic rites, satanic rites. So it's not a good thing at all, but it is part of this overall culture of trying to harness the divine feminine energy for non-good purposes. And just think about Princess Diana, of Wales who was murdered, and of course she was known as the Moon Goddess. So that's a more modern understanding of how this satanic force will identify certain females with the moon. And the moon is an incredibly interesting object, and one day I hope we'll have much more information from that. In terms of Lilith was the first production, the first viable working female. Unfortunately, the soul within her body was a very aggressive reptilian queen or princess. I do not know whether it was a queen or a princess, but it was royal line, of course. But it was a very aggressive line, and it didn't work, and so the biological creators terminated that particular experiment and produced, you know, the Eve object. So you had the Adam object and the Eve object, but there was Lilith before that. And what they did with the Eve soul was they did not use a 100% reptilian soul, which they'd done with Lilith, and that's why it was a disaster. So they used, and this is perhaps surprising to most people, but they used the most human element they could, which is Lyra. So they used the sixth dimensional Lyra and soul, which they spliced with a reptilian soul. So they mixed Lyran with reptilian to produce a much more in connection with the earth female, less in connection with the moon, much more in connection with the earth. Whereas the first soul, the Lilith soul, was a very, very belligerent, angry royal reptilian. So, okay, I hope that helps. That's useful.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
The next question actually goes on quite well from that.
Okay.
From Michelle, who says, I have often heard the moon is a satellite-type object operated by the reptilians.
Does go well.
If so, why does it play such a big role in astrology and nature? Tides are determined by the moon stages. Full moon, high tides. Many thanks to Simon and Becky.
Thank you. Well, yes, okay, so I don't need to go to the first part. Because that's just literally been answered. Any huge or large planetary body is going to have some form of effect. It's not gravitational pull in the true sense of the word, but it is an effect. And the reason that the moon was placed at that position was precisely because it would have an effect. And what you haven't mentioned, of course, is the effect it might have on the female reproductive cycles. And there is a very strong connection, and that's all part of this satanic control system. The moon is just close enough for its mass to affect the earth, but not so close that humanity is popping up every 5 minutes to have a visit to the moon. It was always going to be a time when humanity obtained space travel, and that would be the first clash between whoever was controlling the system and the human race. And of course, we saw that since the 50s, but predominantly when the official moon landings took place, and there was an authorized moon landings or a moon visit from Earth. Although what we saw, what was shown to us on television, is not actually accurate. What it is true to say is that space men did go to the moon, but not around the circumstances that we're given. So the moon was always placed in that position so that it could be a base on the far side, so that it could be a good observational point, so that it would have an effect. And astronomy and astrology work quite closely in hand, although the official astronomers wouldn't accept that. So from an astrological point of view, there's a massive connection with the moon. The moon does have this very important power. And when certain signals that are not perceived by the eye or the ear are bounced from the moon or projected from the moon, it does have an effect on certain individuals and can be part of this satanic control system. So it's not just Saturn and Saturn's rings that create reality. Remember that that is part of the holographic reality for the universe. But the moon is a key reflector, or a key producer of information that maintains the status quo on Earth. And you know, that's something that will have to be cracked at some point if humanity is to have the full understanding of how it's been manipulated over the thousands of years. It's a good question, and I appreciate you writing in. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle has also written another question. Says, I have always wondered if reptilian humans know they are reptilians. Many people say, for example, that Hillary Clinton and some famous actors, for example, are reptilians, and that they shapeshift. But do they know that they are?
Right. It's such a hard concept for me to explain. No, it isn't. It's an easy concept for me to explain, but it's quite a difficult one for the listener to grasp it and to put it into a context that he or she can, you know, work with. There are many sorts. Take an ordinary physical human body and put a reptilian soul into it. That doesn't actually mean it's reptilian. Lilith, let's go back to that, Lilith contained a 100% reptilian soul. That doesn't mean Lilith was reptilian, because she was in a human female form. But her personality and her actions were very reptilian. Her way of thinking, her way of being was totally reptilian. Now, there are literally countless thousands and thousands and thousands of people on the planet like that. Just as they may have a Palladian soul, or they might have an Andromedean soul, or they might have a spliced soul with different elements to it, as indeed Eve had and Adam had. That doesn't make them reptilian. What it makes them is a reflection of that culture. And so the physical body will begin to take on the signature of the soul. And I've said before that, you know, if the blueprint is correct, you will have five digits on one hand and five digits on another hand. So that generally can't be altered. But what the soul will do is say whether you will be fat or thin, or how short or how tall you are. So within the parameters of that model, the soul will attempt to express itself and say, this is the ideal physical body for the soul, you know, that the soul is within the body. Now that's completely different from a reptilian entity that holographically takes over a human form. So for all intents and purposes, we see a human form, but there is actually a much more than a reptilian soul. There is a reptilian being within that physical form. Excuse me. And that's very hard to get across. And that's why David Icke struggled when he went and was one of the first guys, I think, ever to talk about, you know, certain well-known people to be reptilians. And now, of course, it's accepted by those who've done that research. But at the time, it was groundbreaking, and he took a lot of stick for it. But they would know they're reptilian in the sense that they understand that, because they are what they are. But there is still a cutoff. When you're in the human form, apparently, you're closed down as to what you can and can't perceive or remember. And then when the reptilian activates, you forget the human part and you switch into the reptilian part. It's almost as if there are two separate entities living within that one physical body, and one is switched on, one is switched off. Now, they're very few and far between, very rare, more than a handful, but incredibly small numbers across the earth. The vast majority of people have varying degrees of reptilian soul within their body. And you know, you could have a person with 100% reptilian soul, and they have made a conscious choice for good, and they are one of the good guys. You could have a person with a Palladian soul, who should be one of the good guys, but they've made a conscious choice to be totally evil. So we mustn't and we cannot judge a person because they have this type of soul or that type of soul. We judge them because of their actions. If a person is service to self, then it doesn't matter what the soul is, that's the path they've taken. But if they're service to others, it doesn't matter what the soul is, that's the path they've taken. So too many people get hung up on, are you this, are you that? The reality is, what path have you chosen? You know, where are you going? What are you trying to do? And it's much harder for somebody who has reptilian in them to break free of that conditioning, because it is, it's a culture conditioning, to stand up or face the cultural history with the reality and to win that argument. It's dead easy for a Palladian person or anyone else from the fifth dimension or higher, because being in a higher dimension, they look down energetically and they see the history that has unfolded before them. So they can make decisions and judgments with hindsight. If you are in the third or the fourth dimension, you are only experiencing living the time now. You don't have the hindsight to look at the greater picture. You can look back 100 years or 1,000 years and you may or may not learn lessons from that. But unless you are looking back millions of years, you don't see it in its entirety. You know, so think about when the British Empire in its heyday was into slavery. Now 2019, British look back and they are frankly ashamed at what they did. But they haven't worked it through the system because it's still there. There's still this supremacy. There's still this racism that's rampant on the earth. But in 30,000 years' time, when you look back, you will see it in its entirety and it's sealed off. And, you know, humanity had gone through that and had learnt from that and therefore had moved on to the next part of its stage of learning. So that's what happens when you're in a higher dimension. You have the benefit of time and space to reflect and look back and learn. When you're in the thick of it, in the third and the fourth dimension, you don't have that benefit and you have to make the choices and the decisions that you think are right. So I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Valerie Ann says, please post a short video petting all your kitties while on vacation break. Everyone loved seeing you pet your beautiful white kitty in the following video link. That must be Snuston, yeah?
Hmm.
So everyone... Oh, yeah. It's one of the qualities that puts you ahead of everyone else.
Oh, thank you.
So maybe we should call them through.
All right, well, shall I go and pet the kitty that is currently sleeping in the basket that you can see there? It's a very strange looking cat, as you can see, and I'm sure that those of you who've been watching have been, you know, looking and thinking, when is he going to mention that? You know, what is that? That's a very unusual breed of cat. It really is. It's obviously a dog. Her name is Freya. She normally is in the other room, but today she is here. And it was about time that she took an appearance. Unlike a cat, of course, who cats love the limelight, they will parade and show off their best side. Of course, dogs, which are fifth dimensional animals generally, they're not that interested and bothered. The cats probably won't come in so much because the dog is here today, and they do get on very, very well. But it's also the sleeping time of the cats. So I won't fake a movement of cats or you know, there won't be a sort of a bowl of fish hidden under the seat here to bring the cats through. They'll just come and go as they please, and that's much more natural. So you can be assured that when a cat does come through, it's more beautiful because the cat has decided to come through. And so just be patient, I'm sure that will happen. So thank you for the kind words. There are a number of people who don't like the cats. There are a number of people who would like me to be in a very modern, plain office, white, nothing there, the trappings of home, just an absolute plain office. because they think that's very professional, and you know, you do the presentation in a very professional way. I'm not into that. This is where I live. This is what I do. I don't have a place that I go and I be Simon Parks, with a blank wall and, you know, very clean and pristine and very, very clean lines and, you know, very corporate, and then go back and be someone else. I'm never that. This is what I am. And why would I pretend otherwise? You know, when I went public 10 years ago now, I didn't hide anything. I was absolutely, you know, there it is. That's it. You make your decisions about me. This is what I have to say. You know, I'm not going to drip feed you. You know, well, after 1 year I'll tell you this, and after 2 years I'll tell you that. You know, I trust people enough to know that there are enough good people out there who, when you give them the information, they will make the choice that they need to make. I don't have the right to say, I'll hide this from you, or I'll pretend to be this or pretend to be that, because why then would you trust the information I give you? So no, you know, I'm not criticizing or attacking people who like to be in that pristine office. That's what they do, and you know, that's fine, and that's the way they are. I'm just saying that, you know, this is the way it is. You are seeing me for who I really am, and those people who have a consultation with me, you know, the feedback is, well, you're exactly what you appear. Now, that's interesting, because a long time ago I used to work in a jewellery shop in London's West End, and at Christmas time some of the very well-known British actors would come into the store to buy Christmas presents for people in the theatre or the television. And I was a very young man then, and I was really upset and shocked that these big names were nothing like the role they portrayed on the screen. It was totally disheartening. There was only one person who actually was exactly as he appeared on the screen. But everybody else was completely different. So they were actors. Of course they were. That was their role, and that's what they were paid for. But it was, for a young man, it was quite shocking to come face to face with a person who was not at all the image of what he had portrayed on the screen. And in fact, what made it really bad was the image portrayed on the screen was better than the image that I met face to face. So it was a real shock and shame. And what I take a great heart from is people say to me when they do chat to me, oh, you're exactly the same as when you do your radio shows. Well, that is because that is me. I'm not an actor. You don't suddenly run and put a suit on and a tie or do this or do that because I'm doing a radio show. I mean, I have done a couple of shows or where I've been interviewed where the people have said to me, can you go for a plain background, please? Can you do this? And I just say, no, I'm not doing that. I might move the odd object because that's really upsetting whoever's in charge. But I won't change. I won't do that. You know, can you move the camera here? Can you do that? No, I'm not going to do that. This is the way I am. And if you don't like it, that's fine. Go and interview somebody else. So everyone's different, but this is what I appeal to humanity based on who I am, not on some projected image that I think people want to hear or see. It's not my part to try and judge what you guys want. It's my part to bring to you the truth that is given to me, and for you to do with it whatever you want. So that's a good question. We're getting some good ones today, and they're different from normal, so thank you.
We'll try and get the cats in at the end, perhaps.
Well, they'll come in if they want to.
Yeah. Okay, the next question is from Oriane, who says, dear Simon, you mentioned in a previous podcast that you have witnessed the birth of souls, that they were born in batches, in brackets, hence soul groups, that they were about 18 inches long and oblong. Please can you further detail on the subject, like, one, how many are born at a time or per batch? Two, how often in terms of cyclical time? Three, in what circumstances does this occur? In brackets, does this occur within the womb of a black hole or other? Question mark. Please tell us everything you can tell us. Thank you very much.
Okay, just one correction there. I've never said that the soul was oblong. I've said it's oval. So the soul would never be oblong. It's very hard to get corners in creation like that. So the soul is 18 inches long, approximately. That's, you know, looking at it, I might be a bit out. But it's American football shaped, or rugby football shaped, and it's a bluish white light around the edge. The center you can almost see through. Thickness, I've never actually seen it side on, I've only seen it front on, but I don't imagine it's very thick at all. At no point do you sort of have to shield your eyes from it. It's not that sort of bright. It's sort of a, I say ozone, it's not, but it's a sort of a bluey, whitey, you sometimes get with ozone, that sort of colour. They are, you shouldn't be surprised if I tell you they are created in groups of six. You call them batches. That sounds like some sort of artificial. We're not going to use that word because this is the great creator. It doesn't make them batches. It's not like a hen in a hen house, batches of eggs. It is. These are created. Born is an interesting concept. I never considered that word. I only considered the word born with the organic physical being. With the energy creation of the soul, I think it's a creation rather than born. So they are, interestingly enough, in the petals of a flower. In other words, think of a flower, think of the petals around it like a sunflower or a daisy. So the central energy form budding off from it are the souls, six of them, and then they will release. I don't know what the pattern is, but they will release, whether it's clockwise or anti-clockwise, I can't remember, but they are released. And you're absolutely right, well done, that is how you get soul groups, because if you have one of these energy forms with six souls from it, then they can be very closely connected if one is right next to another one, which is not likely in another group here creating. Now, whether there are great banks or batteries of these, I have no idea. I have just seen one of these energy forms in front of me and the souls being created. I've also seen alien technology breaking the law, taking a soul and taking it from one physical body and transferring it to another body. So it's, I can't say it's a vacuum, I have no idea of the environment, but it's a sealed place. And I do remember a double door. This is incredible, but it's true. A double door, like an outer door and an inner door. So if the soul escaped, it would be trapped between the, not an airlock, but the same principle. And a device in the ceiling moving along, not on a pulley or wheels, you know, moving along with the soul actually, as like hanging from it. And then it would travel along and then go to an inert physical form, and the soul would immediately wish to go into the body because the soul requires a physical form to live in. And so when it's brought within a certain range of a viable form, a form that is part of its understanding, in other words, if you took a human soul and you offered it an ant, I doubt that the soul would want to go into an ant. But if you have a human form and a human soul, it will automatically go. You don't have to do anything, just go straight to it. So I've seen that occurring. I've also seen in ancient Egypt, I'm talking not the historical, archaeological Egypt, I'm talking sort of 25,000 years ago, I've seen the soul rising out of a dead form placed in the black sarcophagus, floating, and then going into a baby that's placed, a six-month-old baby or three-month-old baby, don't know exactly, probably weeks, days old, and then the soul going into that form. So the great creator creates things naturally, but those with the brain power and the technological power usurp that their own free will, of course, and they do that. So I hope that, again, goes some way to answering the questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Emily says, are you aware of the mantis beings coming to help us heal our world?
Well, there are a number of off-planet entities that are here for a number of reasons. There are a number of good guys who... I wouldn't use the term heal the world. I'd talk about ascension of humanity, that they basically want humanity to ascend. And they predominantly are humanoid species. These are alien beings who have a strong connection to humanity, full stop, wherever they may be, and therefore this is the battleground at the moment. So it's a prized location, and so a lot of human-type creatures want to show their support for humanity and are helping at the moment. Now, there are some creatures, as a faction of the mantis or mantids, that also have a vested interest in wanting to see humanity evolve, and in their own way they are playing their part. So we mustn't just assume that every alien is evil. We must assume that, just like anywhere else, there's a split between those that want the status quo to maintain because they get benefit out of it, and those that think it's time now for humanity to go to the next stage, to break free, whatever happens, come what may, that the humans must be given that opportunity. So the mantis, or a group of the mantids or mantids, are most definitely playing a role in trying to advance human consciousness to break free from the controls that a human slave state is in presently, although it's much better than it was even a year ago or 2 years ago, certainly more than 5 years ago. But there are other forms that don't look anything like human. Maybe they don't have a body at all, but they want humanity to evolve. And then, of course, there are those beings that have a vested interest in maintaining the situation because it's been helping them. They obtain a whole range of things from the level of consciousness that humanity is in presently. So with the vast majority of people unawake and unaware, well, that suits the agenda, not just of high-flying human bureaucrats or great corporate CEOs or corrupt politicians, but some of these entities that are above them. It is the world that they created, perhaps, and the world that they know no different from. So there's this fundamental battle between those who have sided with humanity and those that have decided to be against humanity. And we cannot say one group is exclusively one way or the other. We can say with the reptilian group that probably 90-odd% want the status quo, but that would be... we need to say there are a very small group of reptilians who actually want good for the earth, good for the people. So we must be careful not to lump everyone into one basket. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Diane says, I am in Georgia, USA, and would like to connect with like-minded people. Would like to join your organisation, as it is a lonely world sometimes.
No, it's a terribly lonely world. That's one of the reasons I created Connecting Consciousness, was because I wanted people to, first of all, hear me come out and say all these wonderful things, so that they thought, crikey, I'm not as crazy as I think I am, or more importantly, as crazy as other people tell me I am. And here's this guy in Britain who's come out and said all these things, and wow, he's quite credible, and he's not the crazed person, he has a normal life. So that gives them confidence and strength. And I formed Connecting Consciousness to put like-minded people, or people with the same experiences or the same beliefs, so that they could support each other. We did do that. And we've got a number of countries which have got their own websites or their own blogs. and process now of moving to what we call MeWe. It's a platform that's far more secure. It'll never be 100% secure, but it's far more secure than Facebook or WhatsApp. And I want every connecting consciousness group in the countries to move to MeWe, and we're going to be rolling that out in the next few weeks, so that that is the official platform that they can work on in a much more secure way. All you have to do is go onto my website, please, simonparks.org, and there is a button there, I wish to join Connecting Consciousness, and please go through that one. That is how I want you to join. I don't want friends or family trying to join people, because this is about a spiritual contract between your heart, your higher self, and Connecting Consciousness. It is not a 3D, 4D contract. This is a contract about service to others. So when we get signed in by other people, we don't actually have to challenge ourselves. We don't actually have to think about it. Oh yeah, they'll get me in. I'd much rather that people do it themselves and then they ask themselves the questions. Why do I want to join Connecting Consciousness? Now, what is my belief? What is the importance of trying to help the planet, etc., etc., etc.? Okay, thank you.
Although when people do join, sometimes family and friends do want to, but everyone can just join through the website. But we are having family and friends of Connecting Consciousness members joining, which is really nice.
Yes, but do it individually, please. Yeah. And there's no age limit, you know, it doesn't matter how much, and we don't charge an entrance fee. Mm. That's really important, you know. People don't appreciate it because, you know, the model that we have, the game in town, is where a person pays an entrance fee and they join. I quite like the idea of having basic rules and regulations about, you know, love and consciousness. And perhaps people don't appreciate that many of these platforms, web servers, paid for by me through the donations that I receive. You know, I don't ask groups of Connecting Consciousness in any country to pay for the structure, the infrastructure. You know, what will happen is we'll do a conference and people come to that conference and they will really kindly donate money, or they'll give me something. That money helps to pay for the service to do what we're doing today and do everything else. But I was very keen about the debate about charging an entrance fee, because, you know, then we're bringing this Babylonian money spell onto it. The difficulty is that we are in a world that requires money, and if people don't donate, then we can't really do what we need to do. And on that score, unfortunately, I don't have my list of thank yous. Those of you who are regular listeners know that I really like to say thank you. Maybe it's because we've been on a holiday, maybe because so many things have occurred, but for whatever reason I haven't been able to this time do the list. I will for the next one. So I'll just say to everyone who's so wonderfully contributed, thank you so much. And you've now got an idea of some of the parts that your money goes towards. It goes to carrying this message forward. It goes to supporting not just me, but what we do. And there are a number of people who I pass some of those donations across because they are disabled or they're members of Connecting Consciousness and they're having serious issues. So, you know, the money that you give is used for the creation of this organization and its embeddment. And so I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Donna says, love your show. Hello, enjoy your vacation, although I'm on pins and needles until the next one. I mean the next show.
Yeah, not the next vacation.
Yeah. Always want you safe and rested. Question, Julian Assange. Where is he? Who is holding him? Is he safe? Your opinion on him, please. With love and thank you, Donna.
Well, thank you, Donna. We're all in physical forms, aren't we? Therefore, we do need a break. The trouble is that if you're a machinist or you work in a factory, you take your break and you go, and you really do break, you do go, and you don't have to worry about the factory. If you have a job, you're a salesman or something, maybe you have to check in. But of course, there isn't really a break for me. there is a break from routine. But you know, if I get an important piece of information, I'm not going to say, "Hey, I'm on vacation." That can wait. I have to go back into work mode and do that. But that's out of choice. I'm not moaning or complaining. That's out of choice, and I wouldn't want it any other way. So my vacation is my physical break, and that's really what I do. And I've completely forgotten the question now. What was the question?
Julian Assange.
Oh yeah, Julian. Okay, that's
who's
fine.
Holding
no,
him?
No,
is
that's
he
good.
Safe?
That's fine. Thank yeah. you. Oh, I just, you know, my dyslexia. I just go off on something, and then the here and now moves in a strange way for me. But you know, the information is important. I'd said some weeks ago that depending if you went to Sweden, where he was charged with sexual offences, then we're in trouble. But if you went to America on secrecy charges, we weren't so much in trouble. The point being that if he goes to America, he's still in Britain at the moment, but he's been extradited to the US, and he goes to America, then he will at some point be offered a position to testify as to the information he's received and the validity of that information. So I see Julian Assange as a key player in bringing down the evil elite, because his testimony will open some doors to some very interesting possibilities. Is he all right? Yes, he's okay. He's fine. The Americans particularly want him fine. You know, it's not like the old Wild West, you know, $500 dead or alive. This certainly offered money for him in terms of the police, but it was alive. They want him alive. Okay, thank you.
Okay, next question is from Suzette. Hi, Simon. What is the real reason Trump is building the wall in the Mexican border? Is it really to keep out Mexican children hybrids? I am a first generation Mexican American in the USA, and I'm also the first to have a spiritual awakening in my family. In brackets, we are all dominantly Catholics.
Right.
I am just so curious why we are treated like a threat, if not me personally, then our race.
Okay.
Thank you for all you do. You're a beautiful soul and appreciate all the disclosure you teach. Much
Thank
love.
You. That's very, very kind. Thank you for saying those kind words. Not likely do you, likely do you say them, so thank you. So first of all, it's dreadful if any particular race or group of person feels that they are being targeted. And that's happened in history all the time. I'm not in President Trump's head. I wouldn't want to be. So I can't know, you know, the thinking in and out. What I can say is that the wall or the fence was never designed to keep out people. It wasn't designed to keep them in, and it wasn't designed to keep them out. For political reasons, and I can't give you any more than that. So the point with the fence is that politically it was sold as a barrier, because Trump felt that he needed an excuse or a reason that would play well into political forms but would keep the bad guys off the real reason for this production. The difficulty for me, of course, is that it demonized in some respect a group of people. Now the question is whether it's right for illegal immigrants to come through and be treated. I mean, some of the Democrats are saying that, you know, if they were elected president, they would let any illegal immigrant come through and live in the country, which is just as a nonsense, isn't it? Because it's a bit like saying, okay, well, anyone can come in off the street and live in your house. You wouldn't have that. You might say, as a service to others, if you saw a homeless person, you might take them in and you might look after them, because that's a really good thing to do. But what if 50 people turned up? Where were you going to put them? So, you know, politics, as always, has got in and by men and women, has been creating a big firestorm. The reality is that the fence will be made of a metal that's been impregnated over the last 3 years with very interesting properties. And it will be possible to generate a field which would resonate with a metal fence which would have a very beneficial effect for humanity, would reduce the effect of the negative part of 5G, and that there is some benefits that would come through it. So please, all I can tell you is the fence was never designed to keep out one group of people. It was designed as a self-defense system against 5G. Remember that the President of the United States is advised or has access to the finest minds on the planet. Now, whether he decides to listen to that is entirely up to him. But I can tell you that the finest minds on the planet are available to advise the President. And he has been advised about 5G in entirety, is aware that there is a group outside of his control who has a vested interest in 5G. He is not in a position to stop that, simply because millions and millions of people live for their cell phones, their mobile phones. Millions and millions of people want to be able to download a film 3 seconds faster than yesterday. Millions and millions and millions of people want a phone that's got this colour, because 2 days ago that colour was out of date, so they want the new colour. And this is the way that humanity has been tricked. You know, there are countless people in the Palestinian enclave that are in desperate need, and there are people in Africa in desperate need. There are people in my country that are in desperate need. But millions and millions and millions of people are more interested in how fast their cell phone will download rather than some of the more pressing issues of humanity. But that's part of what's happening here. So all I can tell you is that the fence, and we're going to call it a fence, not a wall, fence is part of an integral strategy that Trump's advisors have given him, which will provide security, but not physical security in the true sense of the word. Remember, of course, that there are a number of very evil people who wish to traffic vulnerable victims, could be Spanish, could be anybody, and promise them the world and try and get them across the borders into the US. And those individuals are traveling for the right reasons. They want a better life for their children. They want a better life for themselves. They want to have a job. And nobody can criticize that. But the problem is that these individuals who are doing this, these are the people who are not just individual money-greedy men. They are part of a secret shadow government. They are part of an organization trying to destabilize continents. Now, we saw it in Germany. You know, where else in history you've heard of 1 million people being moved in the space of a very short period of time into another country? You know, that just doesn't make sense. It does make sense if you're trying to destroy the fabric or the structure of a community. So what we must never do is blame the individuals. What we must blame is those who are at the very top of the tree and are doing all the organizing, the controlling. They're the ones that need to pay the price, not the poor individuals who have been promised, you know, a better life, and they've been lied to. So, you know, please, in summation now, you know, those people who are clever enough to understand what's going on don't hate any one group. What they dislike or hate, if that is the right word here, are those who are trying to manipulate world situations, because fear, hate, war takes humanity off its ascension process and drags it back down again. So as far as I'm concerned, the information I've received is the fence is not a physical barrier, although of course it will be, but it is more to do with the benefits for ascension. Thank you. Have we got time for one more, or how are we doing?
I think that's it for today. Wanted to mention, because people might comment about the fact that there's newspapers in the dog's bed. She does have blankets. She has blankets that she drags out of the dog's bed and all over the house. And she dragged Simon's newspapers into the bed to rip up. So that's why that's there.
Well, I also leave papers about because I think it's excellent that the dog could educate itself with with fake news and then test the dog afterwards to see if it could discern the difference between fake news and the real news. So thank you so much. It's always great to reconnect with you all. Stay safe in the sense that don't put yourself into any way deliberately harm's way, but neither be a victim, neither play it dumb or stupid in that sense of the word. Try now to model the world that we want. Stand up for yourself, be strong, but don't take unnecessary risks. See you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, so this is a quick addendum. At the moment that I closed the show, they were all waiting outside and they decided to come charging in. And I thought, well, that's a shame because you wouldn't get a chance to see them. So there's Stormbjorn, who is the black catfish that's just walked out there. And then that's Lavana. There's the silver cat there. And this little one is the youngest here. This is Ingomare. The reason that she's called Ingomare is that I am fairly convinced that the soul of Ingomar, the cat that lost some time ago, reincarnated into this one. So it's a girl, so we can't say Ingomar, but we can say Ingomare. So there you go, that's that one, and that's what a wild face on you. Okay, thank you very much indeed, and that definitely is it for today.